Bharatvarsha, and today's segment is History of Yoga. We have in our studio Sahana Singh and Dr. Raj Vedam, and I will hand over to them.
Namaskar. Welcome to the first episode of History of Bharatvarsha, a brand new program on this radio station brought to you by Indian History Awareness and Research, or IHAR. I'm Sahana Singh, and with me is Raj Vedam. So from today onwards, every week, we will bring you exciting episodes of Indian history from unique perspectives. Today is June 21st, 2015, and we are all celebrating International Yoga Day. It is only appropriate that we trace the history of yoga, one of the greatest gifts from our ancestors. So Raj, let me pick your brain for the benefit of the listeners. What are the earliest instances of yoga according to traditional accounts? You know, the earliest instances.
Thank you, Sahana. Namaste to all our listeners. So in our traditional accounts, what we see is that the oral tradition maintains that Mahadeva Shiva himself was the Adi Yogi, whose ecstatic dances in Mount Kailash attracted seven seekers. These seven seekers eventually became the Sapta Rishis, who learned the truth about yoga from Mahadeva himself, and they are supposed to have spread the tradition of yoga in the world.
Right. But what about our Vedas and Upanishads? Do they mention yoga?
Oh, yes. But even before I talk about the Vedas or Upanishads to seek affirmation about yoga, it is very critical to keep note that when tracing the use of the word yoga in our scriptures, we should not get caught up in this mind block that the first use of the word indicates its point of origin. Yeah. For example, we might use the word breathing in English to refer to our involuntary drawing in and out of air. But did we not breathe before there was a language to describe it? So we should be very careful not to be caught in this mind block that yoga did not exist. There was no word for it in the Vedas or other places. But anyway, without embroiling ourselves yet in the geopolitical game of dating the Vedas, we can safely call out the instances where yoga is described in the Vedas and Upanishads. For example, in the Rig Veda, hymn 5.81.1, we have the first reference to yoga used in the context of yoke, as in Surya's chariot. Then we have the Upanishads, which are commentaries on the Vedas and maybe of antiquity as great as that. Again, we won't go into what is the antiquity because you have different opinions from different people, whether it is linguistic analysis or whether it is on the basis of astronomical dating based on phenomena found in these Upanishads. We can have dates ranging from 6,000 years old for the Upanishads on the basis of astronomical dating, for example, by Balagangadhara Tilak. Or you can have people like Max Müller who use linguistic analysis and said that it's 1,000 BCE. But let's not get caught up in that game. So in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, which is one of the earliest known Upanishads, there is mention of pranayama in the hymn 1.5.23. Then you have the Chandogya Upanishad, where the hymn 8.15 refers to the practice of pratyahara, which is concentrating of all of one's senses on the self. Now, there are also a group of Shivayat sadhus, or if I may dare to call them yogis, who are called vratya, and they are mentioned in the Arthava Veda. They emphasized body postures that might have later become the yogic asanas. We also have the Katha Upanishad, where the use of the word yoga has a similar meaning as a modern use of the word, which is to possess steady control of the senses, cessation of the mental activity, and leading to a supreme state. You also have the Book 2 of the Svetashvatara Upanishad, which states a procedure in which the body is held in an upright posture, the breath is restrained, and the mind is meditatively fixed in a quiet place. And if that is not enough, you have the Maitri Upanishad, where mention is made of the sixfold yoga method, which is pranayama, which is breath control, pratyahara, which is introspective withdrawal of the senses, dhyana, which is meditation, dharana, which is mind concentration, tarka, which is philosophical inquiry or creative reasoning, and finally samadhi, which is intense spiritual union or absorption. You also have the Taittiriya Upanishad, which defines yoga as a mastery of the body and senses. And among our audience, I'm sure everybody knows about the Bhagavad Gita, which expounds on karma yoga, the yoga of action, Bhakti Yoga, the yoga of devotion, and Jnana Yoga, the yoga of knowledge. So Sahanaji, what I want to say is that given the enormous amount of mention that we have of yoga, I think there should be no doubt at all that we have yoga mentioned all over our scriptures.
Right, that's a lot of evidence. But, you know, I was thinking that it's so hard to date these works given that they were passed on by oral tradition for a long period. So do we have any solid archaeological evidence of yoga?
Indeed. You know, if you look at times measurable archaeologically, there is evidence of yogic poses. For example, if you refer to the famous Pashupati seal, Pashupati seal is a seal where you find a yogic figure sitting in an asana and with three heads in it. This famous Pashupati seal was found at Mohenjo-daro dating back to 3000 BCE. Then Professor S.R. Rao, who's a famous archaeologist who uncovered Lothal, discovered many terracotta figurines showing various yoga asanas. This shows that at least 5000 years ago, whether it was called yoga or not, we don't know, but there was practice of this in the region. Why I mention that is because we don't know what the Indus Valley script mentions, because it's not been deciphered, and obviously we don't know how it sounded. So whether they called it yoga, we don't know. But what we know for a fact is that there were yoga asanas known at that period of time.
Right. And then what about the ancient Buddhist and Jain sources?
You know, my feeling is that we should not be calling Buddhism or Jainism as distinct from Sanatana Dharma, because they all share the same ecosystem, the same axioms, the same shared history, and more often than not, were practiced simultaneously by the population in whose mind the sharp divisions of religion did not exist as it emphasized today. Let us, for example, note that Adinath of the Jains, which is Rishabhadev, is always shown in a yogic posture. So also Gautama Buddha, in his travails to attain Nirvana, encounters many practitioners of extreme yoga. Gautama himself practiced withdrawal of senses, meditation, mind concentration, and philosophical inquiry on the human nature. All these are known elements of yoga as laid out in the Maitri Upanishad. Thus, we should take care to note that the various sampradayas that arose in Bharat build on accepted foundations and sought to strengthen that edifice over time with intellectual offerings. So I would not see Buddhist and Jaina sources as distinct from Sanatana Dharma. We all belong to the same ecosystem.
Right. And I was wondering about the impact of yoga on other cultures. You know, is there any evidence of yoga impacting other cultures?
Oh, true enough. When we talk about yoga, you cannot stop but look at its impact on the world and other cultures. For example, the Greek scribes who accompanied Alexander in 327 BCE describe yogis. They didn't call them yogis. They called them the gymnosophists.
Okay.
They practiced aloofness and different postures, standing, sitting, or lying motionless. Buddhist and Jain sources of the period also made critical impact on the populations that they spread to. And you know that the Buddhists and Jains were people who traveled a lot outside spreading the Dharma. For example, in China, Taoist meditation is an outcome of the impact of the sixfold yoga method. Vipassana, which S.N. Goenka described as being in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, made major impact on Taoist meditation. In Japan, this became Zazen meditation, or Zen for short. In Korea, the same thing became the Shon meditation. Now, if you look at other religions, for example, in Islam, the Sufis cherry-picked traditions of Hinduism that were not at odds with Islamic injunctions, the assimilation of which started with Islamic invasions of India and their subsequent encounters with yoga. The art of meditation or contemplation science was the subject of an entire section in the works of Imam Ghazali, who lived around the year 1050 of the current era in Iran, and it has been a core practice of the masters of the Naqshbandi order, where the default condition of mankind is immersion in the illusion of the world, and the object of meditation to seek the reality behind the illusion. Now, when you hear that, Sahana, I'm sure that it is strikes an echo with our own practices over here.
Right.
Now, if that is not enough, you look at Christianity. Christianity encountered yoga along two paths. The Eastern path picked it up from Buddhism and Hinduism, whereas the Western path picked it up from Spain via the Muslims. The Eastern Orthodox Christians used a form of meditation called Hesychasm, I guess I'm pronouncing this right, Hesychasm, founded by Gregory in Armenia in the 6th century current era, where special postures and breathing rituals are used, accompanied by the repetition of a short prayer like a mantra. In Western tradition, Aquinas in the 13th century current era declared that meditation is necessary for devotion, and this was expanded upon by another spiritualist called John in the 16th century, and yet another spiritualist called Teresa of Avila, who meditated for hours each day using the rosary and contemplating Christian symbols. So by this, you can see that yoga has made a major impact on all the philosophies of the world.
Right, and that's so fascinating. And I was also thinking about Kautilya's Arthashastra. Does that also have some mention of yoga?
Yes, indeed. So if we look at history, we see that Kautilya or Chanakya, who lived in 350 BCE, was a professor. Yes, they did have professors back then. Was a professor of economics and political science at the famous university at Takshila. And he was the advisor of the Mauryan emperor Chandragupta Maurya and his son Bindusara. Chanakya wrote a famous treatise called Arthashastra, in which in verse 1.2.10 states that there are three philosophies: the Samkhya, which is non-theistic, Yoga, which is theistic, and Lokayata, which is atheistic materialism.
Right. But the first name that comes to mind when we talk of yoga is Patanjali, right?
Yes, indeed, indeed. Yes, Patanjali lived in Gonda near Ayodhya in the 2nd century BCE. Now, this is a little dicey when you look at history, because there is some controversy regarding the date of Patanjali, and I'll just call it out in a minute. So anyway, the Patanjali in the 2nd century BCE refers to the invasion of the Greeks of the town of Saketa, which is also Ayodhya. Now, we know that this event happened around 120 BCE. Now, Patanjali is most famous for his treatise, the Yoga Sutras, and the Bhashya, or the commentaries of the sutras. He's also associated with works on grammar and Ayurveda. But a linguistic analysis of the language suggests an antiquity that is far greater than 120 BCE. So this opens the possibility that there were different Patanjalis in different periods. But whatever be the date of Patanjali, the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali contain 196 aphorisms, sutras, or stanzas that constitute the foundation of Ashtanga Yoga or Raja Yoga.
It could even be that maybe one Patanjali was named after the other Patanjali, right?
True enough. It could have been an honorific Patanjali.
Right. So what do these Yoga Sutras of Patanjali talk about?
So there are Patanjali's Yoga Sutras we can think about broadly in four chapters. Patanjali used very terse Sanskrit language, as was expected of scholars of his era, where all of his 96 sutras could be written on just one poster size sheet.
Wow.
Just in one sheet you could write all of them. The language is so terse, but communicated enormous amount of information.
It's a dense language, you could call it.
True enough, true enough. And in those days, knowledge of Sanskrit to describe these things was a mark of erudition and scholarship. And he possessed that. So the four chapters of Patanjali, you can think of as one. The first one is Samadhipada, and it refers to a blissful state when the yogi is absorbed into the Supreme One. Then you have the Sadhanapada, which refers to the practice or discipline. And here, Patanjali is referring to Kriya Yoga, which is also Karma Yoga, and also Ashtanga Yoga, which is the Eightfold Yoga. Then the third chapter, you have the Vibhutipada, referring to Siddhi, or the supernatural powers that you can acquire by the simultaneous practice of Dharana, Dhyana, and Samadhi. Kaivalyapada is the fourth chapter and refers to moksha or liberation, which is the goal of yoga. So these are the four main chapters of Patanjali.
Right. But Ashta in Sanskrit means eight. So does Ashtanga Yoga have eight parts to it or something?
Yes, indeed, indeed. The Ashtanga Yoga refers to eight practices, and these capture the essence of yoga in all its forms and do not try to box it into just a few exercises. For example, the first one, Yama, refers to five abstentions. Now, these relate to how we relate to the external world as a person. So the five attributes are, abstentions are ahimsa or non-violence, satya or truth, asteya or non-covetousness or removal of desire for objects, brahmacharya, which is abstinence, and aparigraha, which is non-possessiveness or non-hoarding. The second practice is niyama, and it refers to 5 observances, and these are related on how we relate to ourselves or our inner world. The first one was our relation to the external world. The second one is our relation to the inner world. And in these 5 observances, you have saucha, which is cleanliness of body and mind, santosha, which is satisfaction, tapas or austerity for body discipline and mental control, swadhyaya, which is study of Vedic scriptures, and Ishvara Pranidhana, which is dedicating all effort to surrender to God. The third practice is asana, which is the discipline of the body with rules of postures to keep it disease-free and a physical aid to meditation. Pranayama referring to control of life force energies, concentration of the mind. Mm-hmm. Pratyahara referring to withdrawal of senses from external objects. Dharana, which is concentration of the mind or chitta on a physical object like a flame or a murti. Dhyana refers to meditation. And dhyana meditation is the act of meditation where the object of meditation remains distinct and separate from the act of meditation, which is a very subtle thing in Hinduism. Mm. The final one is samadhi, where there is oneness with the object of meditation, meaning there's no distinction between the act of meditation and the object of meditation.
Right.
So these are the 8 practices in Ashtanga Yoga of Patanjali.
Right. And Raj, you said that Hatha Yoga has roots in Patanjali's Ashtanga Yoga. So can you elaborate more on Hatha Yoga?
Indeed. Hatha Yoga asanas have been found in terracotta figurines from Harappa, Lothal and Mohenjo-daro, hinting great antiquity for the practice. Residents of the Indus Valley civilization, which also we know, for example, when we look at the ruins and read about Indus Valley civilization, we know that they were a very clean people and society. They practiced town planning, they practiced cleanliness, they had fantastic sewage systems and other things which led to taking the waste of the population out to a different place, keeping the water sources separate from the waste sources and so on.
Right.
And they also practiced non-violence. After so much of excavation in Indus Valley civilization, we still don't have artifacts that show swords or any kind of weapons of war. That
wow.
shows they practiced non-violence.
Mm.
Now, the funny thing is, if you look at all these things, the residents of the Indus Valley civilization lived life according to at least the first 3 practices that were described by Patanjali in his Ashtanga Yoga, the Yama, Niyama, and Asana. In contemporary literature, if you move away from the Indus Valley civilization and see where else Hatha Yoga is mentioned, you see Gorakshanath, who lived in the 10th century current era. He authored several books which describe Hatha Yoga. Hatha Yoga describes the human body made up of networks of 72,000 pathways called nadis.
Wow.
Now, Hatha Yoga aims at purification and balancing of the nadis. At least 84 asanas were practiced in traditions of Hatha Yoga before colonial times. A number of gurus between the 10th century current era to current times expanded and refined the practice. A work found in the Mysore Palace called Sri Tattvanidhi describes 122 postures. So when you look at the modern schools of Hatha Yoga, they all derive from the works of Tirumalai Krishnamacharya, who taught from the year 1924 to 1989. Among his students who popularized this in the West were Pattabhi Joyce, BKS Iyengar, Indra Devi, and TKV Desikachar. So this rounds up the practice of Hatha Yoga from the very great antiquity to the current times.
Thank you so much, Raj. And I think now we should open our phone lines and ask listeners to send their questions. The number is 832-361-0625. Please call and give your questions and we'll see if we can answer. We have time to answer them. And meanwhile, I think we can continue. Raj?
Yeah, I will have a couple of things I want to ask you. Now, in the Mahabharata, and specifically in the Vishnu Sahasranama, there are names, Yoga, Yoga, Vinda. So, Yoga, Vinda means the one who knows the yoga.
Mm-hmm.
That is the name of the Sri Vishnu.
Mm-hmm.
So, there is a one reference also. Then, in our Vedanga, 6 philosophies of Hindu Sastra, Yoga is one of them. And it's been practiced, and this philosophy has been practiced for years and years, and I don't know if we can even put the date on it.
True enough, Kantiji. I think the antiquity is very much there. The practice is indelibly intertwined with our civilization.
And recently, French tried to refine meditation, and they started it. Therefore, I think, famous voice, a French philosopher. Now, in the meditation, it's totally different. It's we are trying to stop thinking in the meditation. Here is, and it is therefore he thinks. And I think it's totally different meaning, or they try to define what they could not get the gist of the meditation.
True enough, Kantiji. If you look at our own philosophical methods, our philosophers of ancient past realized that our entanglement with the world of objects, emotions, and thoughts through our senses is how we relate to the external world. And they saw that that leads us away from the path of understanding nature, our purpose, and so on. So they saw it that we need to shut ourselves from the senses and go on an inward journey. And this inward journey is what allows us to finally accomplish understanding the divine nature of ourselves. I guess this is because of a fundamental schism in the Western philosophies, or the, if I may call it, the Abrahamic philosophies and the Sanatana Dharma philosophies. The human nature in Sanatana Dharma is seen as divine, and the human nature in Abrahamic sampradayas, if you will, are seen as fallen.
Sinners.
If you could call it sinners. So this is a fundamental difference between the two. And because we see our nature as divine, I guess our task as a Hindu is to dispel avidya and to try and understand our true nature. And yoga certainly provides us the forum and the mechanism to do that.
Very famous words of Swami Vivekananda, every human being is divine. Mm,
right.
We are trying to explore that, not the our sins or anything like that.
True enough. Very true. Very true. Yeah.
And Raj, I have a quick comment. You know, from all the historical sources you have detailed, it is clear that yoga has such a deep, integral, organic connection with Hinduism. So I would describe it as a fundamental approach that facilitates a Hindu to achieve the bigger goal of self-realization. But nowadays, there's a tendency to divorce yoga from its Hindu roots. So if you see the United Nations, even they have been very careful to not include the Hindu context of yoga when they declared the International Yoga Day. So what are your thoughts on this?
You know, Sahana, this is a subject that is so loaded, so loaded, because the contemporary usage of the word yoga and the propensity of religions that are encroaching, if you will, or appropriating, if you will, some of the intellectual properties of Sanatana Dharma. Mm. So this is a subject that is very contentious. To me, We talked now for the history of yoga that spans more than 6,000 years.
Right.
And we showed how it is tied so deeply with the practices of the people of Bharat, with our philosophy, with our understanding of human nature, with our understanding of life itself. And it's an integral part of who we are.
Right.
It's an integral part of what we exported to the external the world also, to other philosophies on yoga. So with knowledge of the history of yoga, to me it is absolutely bizarre when people de-link yoga from the practice of Hinduism. It's a matter of deep concern when the methods of yoga are appropriated by other religions. Because by secularizing the practice of yoga, they are weakening the fundamental treasures of Hinduism. So Hinduism has got a lot of treasures.
Right.
Now, when you take every treasure of Hinduism and say, this is not Hinduism, this is secular, and you take it away from Hinduism, and what you leave behind in Hinduism is all the things you don't want, which you can happily bash in forums and say that, oh, this is there in Hinduism, feminism, and, inequalities, and all kinds of things that people lump with Hinduism. So I completely resent that. I completely resent that. I believe that we should, as Hindus, take care to protect our intellectual property. These are gifts given to us by our ancestors. Our ancestors have worked tremendously hard to uncover these truths, and it is our duty as Hindus to protect these gifts and try to make sure that we enrich this offering and pass it on to future generations.
Right. Okay, time to wrap up now.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Dr. Vedam and Saranathi. And it's a pleasure to see you here live in the studio. And we'll have more occasions to continue this discussion as well as the new segment coming up in August, the history of Bharat Varsha.
Thank you.
Thank you.
राम राधे राधे तू श्याम से मिला रे
श्याम राधे राधे तू श्याम से मिला रे
निकुंज में विराजे घन श्याम राधे राधे
निकुंज में विराजे घन श्याम राधे राधे
निकुंज में विराजे घन श्याम राधे 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 राधे
श्याम मिला दे
श्याम मिला दे
राधे राधे
ओ राधे राधे
श्याम मिला
दे ओ राधे राधे श्याम मिला दे ओ राधे राधे श्याम मिला दे ओ राधे राधे श्याम मिला दे
श्याम मिला दे
राधे राधे
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 श्याम मिला दे
श्याम राधे राधे।
This is Bhavi again. I'm going to be singing a bhajan or rag Bhairavi.
मैं द्वार खोल कर बैठा हूँ, तुम आ जाना भगवान। मैं द्वार खोल कर बैठा हूँ, तुम आ जाना भगवान। तेरे बिन मन मंदिर मेरा, तेरे बिन मन मंदिर मेरा है। पढ़ा सुनसान है, पढ़ा सुनसान, तुम जाना भगवान। मैं द्वार खोल कर बैठा हूँ, तुम आ जाना भगवान। रीत पूजा की याद नहीं है, क्या चढ़ाओ पर साद नहीं है। रीत पूजा की याद नहीं है, क्या चढ़ाओ पर साद नहीं है। तुम हो दाता, मैं हूँ भिखारी, क्या दूँ मैं बलिदान, क्या दूँ मैं बलिदान। तुम आ जाना भगवान। मैं द्वार खोल कर बैठा हूँ, तुम आ जाना भगवान। धन की मुझे तो प्यास नहीं है, दर्श मिले बस आस यही है। धन की मुझे तो प्यास नहीं है, दर्श मिले बस आस यही है। तनिक भगत से भगत नाथ की हो जाए पहचान, हो जाए पहचान, तुम आ जाना भगवान। मैं द्वार खोल कर बैठा हूँ, तुम आ जाना भगवान। भगवान, भगवान। Bhagavan, 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 Bhagavan.
Excellent, excellent, Bhavi.
Thank you.
We have Vishwas in the studio today, and Vishwas, today being a Father's Day, maybe you want to say something. What? How we read the Father's Day in Sanatan Dharma?
Sanatan Dharma, first of all, like Father is the base of everything. You know, we always admire our Father. You know, always that they say that, you know, whenever the children do something, they always say that, okay, he's, I think, looks like his father, following what his father was doing or something. So even our dharma says that, you know, Pitru Devo Bhava, you know, our father, we call it as a god. And, you know, our, like, father of all of our human beings are like Brahma or Manu Raja, from which we all, you know, get this beautiful life. So, and also, you know, in our Krishna also said that, you know, it is always confused. It is always a big confusion to whom, you know, we should consider as a guru, you know, because we consider someone as a guru and, you know, maybe we do not like them, like after some time or something. But he said that, you know, the best guru of your life is your father. The best thing you can learn in your life is from father. You know, father can teach you anything that no one can teach you, basically. So I would say, according to our dharma and according to our practical life, we see that, you know, father is a kind of our guru, kind of the person, you know, who teaches us the way of living our life. Because once you come into your life, you know, mother gives us all kind of, you know, breath and everything, but the father is the person, you know, who teaches us how to walk, how to talk, how to behave in the society, you know. And from that point up till you know, our father passed away, you know, he teaches us everything in every stage of life. That's what I believe, that the father is a kind of, you know, every step that he teaches us, it's really, really important that, you know, we learn from them. We have a Bhavi here also. I think she also must share something about father, right? So what do you think about father?
Well, you're ready. Thank you. Go ahead.
I think that what you said is true, that, yeah, a mother gives us life, she gives us breath, but a father is someone who teaches us basically anything and everything that you need to know, like life lessons. And I know that my father teaches me something new every day, and I learn so much from him, and he inspires me to be just like him.
That's true. And, you know, whenever, you know, our father teaches us something, at the first point, we try to ignore that. I don't care, you know, you are with some old beliefs and old thoughts and everything. But when we look at our life very deeply, and, you know, when we go through that particular stage of our life, we think that, you know, whatever he was saying, it was actually right. You know, we didn't take that into consideration. And I was wrong, you know, but the time by time, whatever teaches us, because father teaches us, let's say teacher is teaches us from the books, from whatever is written in the whatever books that he's studying from. But father doesn't teach us from the book. Father is teaches us from the experience that he faced in his life. Whatever he came through, he want to make sure that whatever I suffer from, my children shouldn't be suffer from the problem that I suffer from. So he always teaches us, don't do that. This is not good for us. But at that time, you know, we are new to that particular thing, and, you know, we do not consider it as a seriously. Mm. But obviously that's from experience, and whatever something is said from experience can never be wrong.
Yes, and there are some references. Now we talk about father in a worldly sense, but there is a father of every father,
right.
Father of the father,
right.
And then in Bhagavad Gita, it says, Bija Prada Pita.
Right.
So at this point, on this day, while we we are honoring our biological fathers, we should also not forget about the Bijaprada Pita.
Right.
So
father of the universe.
Father of the universe.
Right. And usually we count like father of the universe as the Mahadev or Brahma or Vishnu, who, you know, put their share for the world to, you know, and prove them as become a father of the universe.
Okay, so let's maybe we can do the Purush Sukta again. That is the in praise of the Lord Narayana or
yeah,
the
sure.
Father of the universe.
This Purush Sukta is something that, you know, Vishnu describes how the world created and how this world will be demolished after a particular time. And this Purush Sukta is also like a the kind of a definition of Lord Vishnu, and from that Lord Vishnu, how the world created, he defines everything. I can also recite this Purush Sukta thing.
Yeah, that will be excellent. Yes.
Yeah, this Purush Sukta, you know, that starts from it saying that, you know, whatever the top part of like a Sahasrashi Rekha Purukaha Sahasraksha, like he's with the thousand hands, thousand faces, and you know, that starts and it ends with the world's creation. So here is the Purush Sukta from the Yajurveda and from the Rudrashtadhyay, the second chapter of Rudrashtadhyay. Harihi Oma Sahastrashi Rekha Purukha Sahastraksha Sahastrapata Sabhumighu Sarvatyaspratvati Atishthadashangulamma Purukha evedaghu sarvam jadbhutam jaccha bhavyam utamra tatvasyeshano jadanne natirohati etavanasya mahimato jhayaunscha purukha padosya vishvabhutani tripadasyam ratan divi Tripad urdhva udait purukha pado seha bhavat punaha tato vikham vikramat sashanana shane avi tato virad jayat virajo adhipurukha sajato atyarichat paschad bhumi matho puraha Tasmat jagnyat sarvahutaha sambhratam prekhodasyam pashustaunsh chakre vayavyana aranya gramyaschaje Tasmat jagnyat sarvahutarechah samani jagnire chanda ghunsi jagnire tasmad yajustasmad jayata Tasmad azva ajayanta jeke cho bhayadataha gavo hajagnire tasmat jata ajavayaha tanjagnam barahiki prokshan purukhan jata magrutaha tena deva ayajanta sadhyare khayaschaje Tat purukham vyadadhu katidhavya kalpayanna mukham kimasyasit kim bahu kimuru pada uchyete brahmanosya mukhamasit bahu rajanyah kratah uru tadasya jadvaishyah padbhyagushudro ajayata Chandrama manaso jaja shakshoho surjo ajayata Shrotrad vayuscha pranascha mukhad gnir ajayata Nabhya asidantar chaggho shirshnavrdyauhu samavartata Padbhyam bhomirdishaha shrotrad tathat lokan akalpayanna Jatpurukhena havikha deva yagnamatanvata Vasanto syasi dajyam grikhma idmaha sharadhavihi Saptasya sanparidhayastrihi saptasamidha kretaha Deva jadyagnan tanvana abadnan purukham pashumma Jagnena jagnamaya janta deva स्थानि धर्मानि प्रथमान्या सन्ना तेहनाकं महिमानः सचन्द्र यत्र पूर्वे साध्याः सन्ति देवाः.
So this is in praise of the Lord.
Right.
And you sing in certain particular style. Is it
right.
called...
It's called Yajurved. You know, all four Vedas has a style of singing.
Right.
Like Samved, you know, you will see Samved in all in like songs,
right.
kind of a musical type.
Correct.
And this Yajurved is, you know, what we recite, like from the north, we would say like a north and the west side of India, we call it Shukla Yajurved. That is what we follow. And
mm.
whatever the people from South India follows, that's called the Krishna Yajurved. And like earlier, we have listened that this same Purushakta, like while ago, that was a Krishna Yajurved. And what we do is a Shukla Yajurved. And
so there is a distinct style of singing.
Right. And also like a chand, you know, mm. we call it like in a music, it's a chand.
Correct.
And also all this has a like a rucha. You know, based on whatever the, you know, the word goes up and down, the based
mm.
on that, there is a rucha.
Yeah, right.
We call it the 16,000 ruchas that
right.
exist in our Ved, actually.
Mm.
And that's based on that, you know, because on the wordings, you know, we, you know, recite that rucha, actually.
Right. So in our shastras, it was emphasized that you do the correct pronunciation and
right.
correct, not
right.
just correct pronunciation, correct way of doing it, rising and lowering.
Lower,
and
right, right, right. Unfortunately, I do not have that much knowledge in
mm.
terms of rucha
mm.
because there are 16,000 ruchas, as I said.
Right.
Every rucha, you know, if you go to like a Sola Vidyapit, if you are aware of Sola Vidyapit,
yes,
the
yes.
one in Ahmedabad, right? If you look at the Brahmin, if you do not listen to them, but if the all 100 Brahmins are sitting in
mm.
a line, you know, their rucha will not go even one inch here and there.
Yeah.
Their ruchas will be like, you know, going in the same wordings and the
mm.
same style.
Yeah. And collectively they will sing in exactly same...
Save, exactly.
Same meter.
Neutral,
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
And it's just like our English word, you know, what if you spell something incorrect?
Mm. Right.
That will have some different
mm.
meaning. Just like
right.
in a Sanskrit,
right.
it has to be recited in a particular, you know, right wordings and a way.
It is very important that we are... doing the havan of
right.
of the
right,
Lord,
right.
and if you don't say the right word
right.
or the don't pronounce it rightly,
right.
it
it's
may have different meaning.
Different meaning, exactly. It is very true. And now we got chance to listen Purushakta today, and it's very auspicious month actually is going on.
Yeah.
The Adhik Mas is going on, which is a particular month of Vishnu, which is comes
mm.
Not like every year, but every after 3 years. It's
every other year, almost like.
3 years,
yeah,
it comes. It's very auspicious
mm.
month, you know. I would even, you know, recommend and request all our listeners, do as much as bhakti of Vishnu you can
mm.
on this month, because it is said in the Vedas that
mm.
whatever you do in this Adhik Mas, you get, you know, the reward of whatever you do, whatever you recite, you get more than twice, more than double what you do in this month.
Yeah, that was great, and thank you, Vishwas.
हमरो प्रणाम प्रणाम बांके बिहारी को
हमरो प्रणाम प्रणाम बांके बिहारी को
बांके बिहारी को कुंज बिहारी को
बांके बिहारी को कुंज बिहारी को
हमरो प्रणाम प्रणाम बांके बिहारी को
हमरो प्रणाम प्रणाम बांके बिहारी को
मोर मुकुट मुकुट मथे तिलक बिराजे,
मोर मुकुट मथे तिलक बिराजे,
मोर मुकुट मथे तिलक बिराजे,
मोर मुकुट मथे तिलक बिराजे,
कुंडल अलका कारी को, कुंडल अलका कारी को, बांके बिहारी को, हमरो प्रणाम प्रणाम, बांके बिहारी को,
हमरो प्रणाम प्रणाम, बांके बिहारी को,
बांके बिहारी को, कुंज बिहारी को, प्रणाम प्रणाम बांके बिहारी को,
हमरो प्रणाम प्रणाम बांके बिहारी को,
मधुर पर वंशी बजावे,
अधर मधुर पर वंशी बजावे,
अधर मधुर पर वंशी बजावे,
अधर मधुर पर वंशी बजावे,
रिझ रे झावे राधा प्यारी को, रिझ रे झावे राधा प्यारी को, बांके बिहारी को, हमरो प्रणाम प्रणाम बांके बिहारी को,
हमरो प्रणाम प्रणाम बांके बिहारी को,
बांके बिहारी को, कुंज बिहारी को, हमरो प्रणाम प्रणाम बांके बिहारी को,
हमरो प्रणाम प्रणाम बांके बिहारी को,
यह छवि देख मगन भई मेरा,
यह छवि देख मगन भई मेरा,
यह छवि देख मगन भई मेरा।
So conclusion of today's radio program was Yoga Day and the Father's Day, and this radio show supported by listeners like you and by Sanatan Hindu Center, which arranges funeral and cremation services in the Hindu traditional way. Call 832-361-0625 or 832-704-9273 and we will take care of your cremation needs. We appreciate your continuous patronage. A big thanks to you, all artists, producers and publishers, for allowing your production to be utilized on Voice of Sanatan Hinduism. We will meet you next Sunday at 9 a.m. on KBreeze 106.1 FM or 102.1 FM, or by logging in to www.sanatanhinducenter.org, or by downloading TuneIn app on your smartphone and search for KBreeze 106.1 FM. Have a blissful week ahead by the grace of the Lord. God bless all of us, United States of America, Bharat and planet Earth.
Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
And it's the Mangalam time.
Thank you. मंगल हो शुभ मंगल हो शुभ मंगल 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 हो शुभ मंगल हो शुभ मंगल हो शुभ मंगल 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 हो शुभ मंगल हो शुभ मंगल हो शुभ मंगल 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 हो शुभ मंगल 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 हो
मंगल हो शुभ मंगल हो शुभ मंगल